This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. A word about last night's presidential debate. And yes, we are still calling it that. During the course of a 90-minute conversation, President Trump used the opportunity to raise questions about the safety and integrity of elections in November. You've heard on the show over the past few months from clerks in several Michigan regions and from state elections officials that they have no such fears. Their concerns at the moment are for producing results in a timely manner, for the most part. But we wanted you to know that a cross-partisan group of Michiganders has formed to recommend best practices for safe voting and hopefully safeguard the process. Barbara McQuaid is part of the team. A former U.S. attorney for Eastern Michigan, she is professor of law at the University of Michigan School of Law. Barb McQuaid, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So this project, Vote Safe Michigan, were there things that came up during primary season that stoked the group to action?
Well, the group has been working since before then. The idea is because of COVID, it seems likely that more people than ever are going to be concerned about going to the polls. And so rather than give up your right to vote, what makes a lot more sense is figure out ways to vote absentee safely. We have, by good coincidence, this new law in Michigan that voters passed by ballot initiative in 2018 that said you can now vote absentee for any reason or no reason at all. And so because we have that capability, we thought it was important to educate voters about how to take advantage of that law so that they can still vote without exposing themselves to COVID by going to the polls.
What sort of recommendations has the group been able to agree on so far?
Well, there are a number of best practices that exist. And luckily, here in Michigan, we have a Secretary of State who's an election law expert and who has adopted many of those recommendations. But, things like making sure that you have to sign the back of the envelope so that your signature can be compared with voter rolls as a way to avoid voter fraud. Using a barcode to track your ballot. So if you put it in the mail, you're able to check its progress and see where it's going. And expanding the locations where you can drop off your ballot. You know, there's been some concerns recently about delays in the mail. And if your ballot is not received by election day, it won't be counted. So in addition to recommending that people vote early, we've seen now the Michigan Secretary of State's office open all these little satellites around the country. Here in Ann Arbor, the University of Michigan Arts Museum is now a satellite where you can go and get a ballot and vote and put it in a drop box. In Detroit, they've opened 29 locations all around the city, including Little Caesars Arena and some other places. And so that, I think, is a really important part of this initiative, the opening of these satellite locations.
So I'm sure you're aware that in recent days, the Michigan House of Representatives has passed a bill that would allow for some more time for city and township clerks to prepare ballots for counting. And that's really what a lot of the clerks had been asking for, was that time to basically do the physical process of checking the voter signatures and removing the exterior envelopes, sort of pre-processing. At the same time, it looks like they still have some pretty clear guardrails. They'll have from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. the day before the November election to pre-process. In your view, is that enough time?
Well, I think more time would be better just to give them adequate time and get a better outcome. But I suppose to the extent the goal is accuracy and not compromising the outcome of ballots, you know, we don't want word to leak out that one candidate is way ahead or another, lest it discourage people from voting. And so I'm fine with it as long as people are also fine with the idea that we may not have a clear winner on election day. And I think that's fine. We just need to make sure the public is aware of that. And the lack of a clear winner on election day doesn't mean there's anything fraudulent or anything wrong. It just means it takes some time to count those ballots. And so, more time up front would help enable that. But there are also, I think, security concerns about opening ballots before they're actually able to be counted. So I think that's a satisfactory response as long as everybody has that understanding.
In your mind, what's the balance between delivering election results in a timely manner and delivering election results in a manner that reflects the will of the electorate?
Oh, I think a delay is a small price to pay for ensuring accuracy. And so I think that if we don't have the outcome, I think Secretary of State Benson has said it might not be until, say, Friday before we get the results of an election week. I think that's okay. I think we just need to tolerate that. It's different from what we've typically had in the past in this country, with the exception of Bush v. Gore, when it took several weeks to sort out the results in that case because of how close things were in Florida. I think that we just need to make sure the public is aware of the reason for that. It isn't that there are problems. It's that this year, because of COVID, we may have a exceptionally higher number of people voting absentee, and it takes time to count those ballots. But I do think it's worthwhile to ensure that they're done accurately and to tolerate a little bit of delay. The election results aren't certified until something like December 19th anyway. And of course, a new president doesn't take power until January 20th. And so having a few extra days to sort through that, I think, is a small price to pay to ensure that the will of the people prevails.
There have been questions raised in recent days about whether the transition of power will go forward smoothly. President Trump has been cagey in suggesting whether he would or would not accept election results. Senator Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, has sort of poo-pooed it and said there's not going to be a problem. I want to ask how confident you are about a peaceful transition of power, whatever the election results may be.
I would feel a lot better about it if President Trump would say, of course, that there will be a peaceful transfer of power. We let the people decide and then we will follow their will. But instead, he says things like, we'll see what happens. And that does concern me a little bit. Now, I suppose looking at in the light most favorable to his perspective, he doesn't want to commit to things until he sees whether there are irregularities, as we saw with Bush v. Gore, if he were to contest the results. And I think there could be some legal bases for that if there is some sort of impropriety. And so I would hope that that's all he's talking about, is that I don't want to commit to anything in the absence of knowledge. But the idea that a president would be soundly defeated in an election and then simply refuse to go, I hope, is a bridge too far even for President Trump.
As someone with some internal familiarity of the workings of the Justice Department, could you foresee a situation in which our systems of government have the sort of blunt force trauma that would accompany a refusal to leave office? And what happens if the Justice Department under Bill Barr tries to support the president's claim that election results are illegitimate?
I am a little concerned about that. You know, ordinarily, I would have said that's preposterous. The Justice Department follows the rule of law and is nonpartisan. But so many of the things that William Barr has done appeared to me, at least, to be for the purpose of protecting President Trump and contrary to norms and normal practice, you know, favoring some of his allies like Michael Flynn and Roger Stone and spinning the Mueller report and things like that, that I don't have a lot of confidence in him. And the Justice Department does have some tools. It has the ability, even though state elections are typically state matters that would be resolved between either private parties or secretaries of state, the Justice Department does have the ability to file briefs called statements of interest in cases where there is a federal interest, and could bring the resources of the Justice Department to bear in that regard. I am hopeful that we won't see a complete breach of the rule of law. I think we're right to be a little bit skeptical, but I am hopeful that while William Barr may see his job as expanding the powers of the executive branch, that even he understands the difference between right and wrong.
I wanted to ask you about one more thing that came up in the debate last night. The Proud Boys. President Trump referred to the Proud Boys when asked about white supremacist groups and told them, quoting here, to stand down and stand by. And that was received with a lot of consternation from a lot of people who have been watching alt-right movements across the United States. We know that there were about two decades there where law enforcement were not really taking alt-right groups terribly seriously as a threat to public safety. Do you think that that is still the case today?
Oh, I think that the FBI has said, the director, Christopher Wray, has testified that white supremacy groups are now the top terrorism threat. They are a domestic terrorism threat. This group, the Proud Boys, is a group of white nationalists. And I think calling upon them to stand by is deeply concerning, because I think even if President Trump later says, well, I never intended for them to do anything, you know, this is a group that is sworn to combat what they see as extreme political correctness. And they may hear that as a call to action. And if President Trump is defeated in the polls, one could imagine them seeing this as their big moment. And so I thought that was incredibly irresponsible, beyond irresponsible, downright dangerous to call upon a group, you know, listed on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website as a hate group, to call them out by name, give them that sort of legitimacy, and ask them to stand by. was really conduct on becoming a president, really dangerous. I'd say even such an abuse of power as to be impeachable in a different time.
The president also called on his supporters to monitor the polls. We started talking about the safety of the vote. Is there a problem with more people, either Trump supporters or Biden supporters, being there in person on voting day?
Yes. And again, I think it's very problematic. There is a federal crime for voter intimidation. And to the extent he is asking people to show up at the polls to intimidate voters, that is a crime. I don't think that was what he was asking people to do, but what he says and what people hear may be two different things. To be a poll watcher, at least in Michigan, you have to get permission from the state to do that. Almost anybody can get it, but they don't want people just crowding out the polling place, especially during COVID, with people who are not there to vote or not in line to vote. And so if somebody wants to go through that process to be a challenger and they do watch polls just to make sure that everything is complied with and is done by the book, that seems fine. But the idea that people could just show up in mass at the polling place to show their support for President Trump, I think state election officials should and would put a stop to that.
Barb McQuaid, professor of law at the University of Michigan School of Law and former U.S. attorney for Eastern Michigan. Barb, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.